Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Cardiothoracic surgery today requires a true team approach. And a very critical, though not well-known member of this team, is the cardiovascular perfusionist. Well, joining me this morning to help us understand the role of this important team member and the training involved is Bruce Searles, Associate Professor of Cardiovascular Perfusion and the Director of the Cardiovascular Perfusion Training Program at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Bruce. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, it's almost like an illusionist, I think, of when I hear perfusionist, but clearly you're doing some magic.
It is amazing what perfusionists do, and it's also sometimes surprising that perfusionists do what they do and people know so little about them.
So what do they do?
The perfusionist, another term for perfusionist is the extracorporeal technologist, and if you take that word apart, extra is outside of, corporeal is the body. Perfusionists circulate blood outside of the body and do things with it to the benefit of the patient while it is in our circuit. So in more generic terms, we run the heart and lung machine during open heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
That's most of what we do is work in the operating room during very delicate cardiac surgery, and we provide the surgeon a motionless and bloodless heart to operate on.
So in other words, you're basically diverting all of the blood from the heart, and the lung is, and your machine is keeping the lungs functioning and keeping the blood moving, with basically pumping the blood through the body for the heart, and the heart can be quiet.
Right. We're very technology heavy in our field. We use artificial organs such as oxygenators to replace the lungs. We use different kinds of pumps to replace the function of the heart. We have hemoconcentrators that replace the function of the kidneys. And the kinds of things that you and I are doing right now that's hardwired into our physiology that we don't have to think about, the perfusionist has to think about for that patient, decide how much blood, how fast, what pressure, how much oxygen, how much carbon dioxide.
I mean, it's an amazing set of responsibilities, I think, to have to do that. I mean, you're really keeping the patient alive.
It is. And my job is never boring. I go to work.
I would think so. That's right.
I stop patients' hearts. And then at the end of the day, after the surgeon has done his very delicate and necessary surgery, I restart that heart and see the patient move on to a healthier lifestyle.
That is amazing. It truly is. And as you said, very little known. I'd say the general population probably doesn't know you exist.
That's true. I've often assumed that the surgeons, when they're explaining what they're going to do that day, simply say, I'm going to put you on the heart-lung machine without necessarily explaining that there's a fallible human being that runs that machine.
Unbelievable. So you are such a critical member of that team. How do you, first of all, how did you get involved in this? What led you to this career path? Because it's fascinating.
Yeah, every perfusionist has a story about how they got into it, and most of them follow a similar path. We all got into it by mistake.
Well, that's not so reassuring.
It's such a little-known field that there's thousands of six-year-old kids running around out there that want to be cops and lawyers and doctors and nurses, but only my kids want to be perfusionists when they grow up.
Okay.
So everybody stumbles upon it at some point during their education. I was getting a bachelor's degree in health science in a state college in Pennsylvania and had the opportunity to observe surgery as part of an internship, and I was just inspired by everything that was going on in that cardiac surgery room, and I tried to meet every professional there, and the perfusionists at that hospital took me under their wing and sat me right down and explained everything they were doing and gave me application material to schools, and the rest was history.
Wow. It's really, really impressive. So what besides, as part of this role, what else are you involved in? What are some of your other responsibilities?
Well, the great majority of what we do is run the heart-lung machine. We also have a number of other technologies that we are the experts in. So we are involved in, for instance, autologous blood conservation. So in any operating room during the surgery, there may be blood loss. And if you use the services of a perfusionist, you can use a cell saver. So we can use technology to recover that blood that's lost into body cavities, collect that, concentrate that, wash that, and give it back to the patient. So they don't need to use someone else's blood. We can conserve your own blood.
Is that done regularly?
That's fairly regular, yep.
That's amazing.
We also provide ventricular assist. So patients whose heart is too weak to provide the full cardiac output to keep them alive. There's a spectrum of devices that we are experience with, starting with intra-aortic balloon pumps, which is like a 40 ml balloon that is placed into the patient's aorta, and it inflates and deflates in sync with the heart's rhythm so that it makes the work of the heart easier.
So it enhances the function of the heart.
Right.
And that's during surgery that's not hearts, where they wouldn't need a heart lung, but they'd need their heart to keep functioning.
Right. It could be before heart surgery. It could be after heart surgery.
Okay.
It could be just to stabilize a patient during an invasive catheter invention. So the cardiologist, as opposed to the cardiac surgeons, might be using that. If the patient is even sicker, then our field moves on to the technologies of ventricular assist devices, which are going to be actual physical pumps that the surgeon places, either attaches to the patient's vascular system or even places the entire pump into the patient's chest or abdomen, which will either augment the function of the patient's heart or completely replace the function of the patient's heart.
How's that different than the heart-lung machine, though?
Well, the heart-lung machine is a very large contraption. It's as big as a desk, generally, and it's designed for temporary use, several hours. A ventricular assist device, or if you take that technology out far enough, it's related to total artificial hearts. These are miniature devices they're going to be placed in, and the idea is to get that patient back up and moving around while this pump continues to support them.
So long after the surgery, they may have one of these implanted, and it will stay with them for a period of time. Does it ever stay permanently? I mean, obviously in the case of a true artificial heart, it would stay permanently, but in this ventricular assist device, it just might stay for a period of rehabilitation.
If we're still calling that device a ventricular assist device, then it's not destination therapy. It doesn't take you off the transplant list. You're still looking for a transplant, or you're hoping for recovery. But if you have one of the few modern, very modern devices that are just being approved by the FDA, then you might have what we would call a total artificial heart. And the idea there is that this device is replacing your heart, and that is the end of the therapy.
So how do people get trained? I know Upstate has a program in perfusion. Is you're the head of the program. You know, what type of background do you need, and how do people get trained? What's your program like?
Well, the training for perfusionists in the United States is very interesting. There are only 16 schools, and we only make 100 graduates across the entire nation.
Wow.
It's a very small and select field. Graduates from these 16 schools will come out with either a bachelor's degree, a post-baccalaureate certificate degree, or a master's degree. But the important thing is that all 16 of those schools offer an accredited curriculum. It's a curriculum that has oversight from a very large accrediting agency, the Committee for the Accreditation of Allied Health Education Programs. So they all offer essentially the same curriculum. And students have to go through a rigorous training process, which includes book work and in our program also an awful lot of simulation experience, as well as actual patient care. Our students here at SUNY will have about 650 hours of training on a simulator, learning the skills before they interact with patients, and then they'll go out and practice procedures at least 4 different hospitals across the nation and perform 150 to 200 bypass procedures before they graduate.
Wow. So how long does this whole thing take from start to finish, this training program?
The training programs are typically about 2 years long. Ours is five semesters long. And once you complete the training program, if you've graduated from an accredited program, then you can go on and take the examinations for board certification. And that's offered by the American Board of Cardiovascular Perfusion.
So it sounds to me like when you say these are accredited, are there non-accredited programs? I mean, are there people doing your skill, your role, you know, playing your role, who haven't been trained this way?
That's a very timely and very interesting question. It's very well established educational process that we have, but you have to recognize that it is actually optional. There aren't any schools that offer up perfusion education that aren't accredited, but there are hospitals still in this country that will on the job train their perfusionists, completely bypassing the accreditation and certification process.
That's kind of scary, actually. But you mentioned before the break, you actually mentioned that there's an issue of licensure here in New York State. Tell us about that.
Well, New York State is the largest state in the country that actually does not require a license for their perfusionists. Every state on our border except for Vermont requires perfusionist to be licensed. And it's just interesting that we haven't taken that step to protect our citizens of the state of New York that will be reporting for this delicate surgery to assure that they have a highly qualified and skilled perfusionist running their heart and lung machine.
And you're hoping that that will take place. I guess it's held up somehow in government morass?
Yes. Actually, right now I am the president-elect of the New York State Society of Cardiovascular Perfusion, and we're happy to report that we have a bill that has passed the Senate, but unfortunately it seems to be really bogged down in the Assembly. Actually, I looked it up on the website last night, and it's listed as dead in the Assembly in January.
Sounds like New York State government to me.
It's pretty amazing what you need licenses for.
What's heartening to me is that right here at Upstate, we have a program that clearly is certified, and people are being very well trained by yourself and the rest of your staff. And I appreciate your coming in and sharing all this with us. It's very enlightening and very exciting to know that we are doing this kind of work and that you are doing this kind of work. So keep up the good work, and thanks for sharing your expertise with us. My guest has been Bruce Searles, Associate Professor of Cardiovascular Perfusion and the Director of the Cardiovascular Perfusion Training Program at Upstate Medical University. We'll be right back after the news with more HealthLink on Air, and we'll be looking at current trends in physical therapy. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYL.